This is the Self-Taught or Not podcast with
Dylan Israel
and Eric Hanchett, where we teach you the do's and don'ts of software development from two software development professionals, one self-taught and one not. Hey everyone, today we have a special guest on Self-Taught or Not, Jesse from CodeStacker. How's it going, man?
Hey, good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Good, good. Thank you so much for jumping on here. Dylan is out on vacation, but I thought it'd be fun to jump in and talk to Jesse this week and just see how he's doing. So if you guys don't know, maybe you can explain a little better. Can you tell us, I kind of want to deep dive into your history a little bit, but before that, can you just tell us what CodeStacker is and what you do right now?
Yeah. So just a YouTube channel that focuses on web development in general. So from beginner, intermediate to advanced topics, any spectrum there. So if you're just starting out, you know, I've got videos for you. If you're intermediate, do a lot of React, Node.js, JavaScript heavy, HTML, CSS, you know, all of the stuff.
Yeah. So you jumped onto the YouTube bandwagon, not YouTube bandwagon, but the YouTube world a couple of years ago, has it been, or is it 2 or 3 years ago?
It's been almost 2 years.
Almost 2 years. And one thing I really like about your videos, Jesse, is you have a very high polished editing style in a lot of your videos with the different transitions and everything like that. So those are pretty cool. And
I appreciate it.
Any background noise you may hear from my side, I apologize. I have two crazy kids running around.
I'm used to background noise as well. I have older kids, but I also have some dogs, and so if you hear them barking, I'm sorry.
yeah, no problem. All right, so let's take it back. Let's roll back in time, and so tell us how did you get into development? Was this something that you and I think you have a pretty unique story. You told me before we started that you you're self-taught in a lot of ways. Pretty much self-taught. So let's take you back. How did your career go? Were you always into software development? Did you wake up, you know, and right out of high school jump into software development, or did you kind of jump around to different jobs, or how'd that go?
Yeah, I mean, I've done the spectrum of jobs, but it really started when I was, I don't know, I think I was maybe around 8 years old. I have an older brother that's about 10 years older than me, and he had a Tandy 1000. And so whenever he would be off at work, I'd sneak into his room, slide in some of those huge floppy disks and play some games. And so, yeah, just ever since then, just computers have been fascinating to me. And then, you know, my dad bought a Packard Bell, and it had Windows 3.1.1 on it. And that's when I really first started learning about code and what you can do with it. Just, you know, the curiosity, how does all of this work? And figuring that out. And actually went to college for electronics. So actual component level, circuit board design, all of that sort of stuff. But never really did anything with that. I got into IT. So I worked deploying large network infrastructures and did that for a while. And then, you know, all along had been coding like on the side. But then about 10 years ago or so, I started as a front-end developer and now a full-stack developer. So just kind of ran the gamut of different things.
I was listening to an interview with Nader Dabit. And if you don't know, if anybody's listening, he's a developer advocate on the Amazon team. And he was saying that he had gone to – he actually didn't even go to high school. He went to high school, but he didn't graduate college, I believe. But he did a whole bunch of jobs between the time he ended up actually programming and the time like after high school. So it sounds like you may have done a few odd jobs between those two. I mean, I'd like to dive into that more. What jobs did you do before then?
So in high school, for sure. In high school, my first real job, I guess, was at Fosto's Fried Chicken. And so I was a chicken fryer. So if you know Danny Thompson, that's kind of his story as well. Like he was a chicken fryer. And then let's see, after that, I did copy machine repair.
Whoa, copy machine repair? Like you were like worked at a Kinko's or something?
Yeah, it was like the mom and pop kind of they sold copiers and then they did repairs. And I was the repairman. I did that while I was in college. And because it was kind of along the lines of electronics, all that, whatever. Yeah. So, and then after that, let's see, I worked in construction. So I built houses for 2 years.
There's something about doing construction too, because I've heard a few other developers that like self-taught developers that like went to construction for a while. I don't know why. Maybe because it's they hire anybody that can lift things or
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. So yeah, I was doing foundation framing. I was doing framing of how the houses, doing finish work, carpentry, all that sort of stuff. Did that for a couple of years. And then that's when I kind of got into the networking stuff. So I went to work for a local computer, like a mom and pop computer shop, and doing large scale network deployments. And then after that is when I kind of I went into the development side of things after that.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of paths to software development. You know, I've myself, I actually did a little bit of tech support for a while. I was a customer service representative while I was in college. I also did just some odd jobs here and there. I think there's definitely a lot of different ways. I did QA a little bit too, which was an interesting career path at the time that I learned a lot, but definitely if I had to do it again, I probably would have not taken that right turn into QA. So how did some of the skills you learned in IT, like networking, help you transition to development? Because I've heard a lot of people who are in like DevOps. I guess back then we called it IT networking, but now we call it DevOps. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, well, DevOps is a little different, I would say, because, you know, like a network administrator is more along the lines of the hardware side of things, you know, switches, routing. I mean, of course, there is software related in all of that, but there's different layers to it. That gives you a very good understanding of basically how the internet works and how websites work and all of that. I would say DevOps is more on the side of the server deployment, maintenance of the server, stuff like that. It definitely gave me a window into this other industry that I had never really thought of going into. That really caught my attention and just went from there.
I remember when we used to call it sysadmin. Like, sysadmin. He's like the root user on your Linux boxes and your Unix boxes, and he also helps set up the servers in the back. And he's the guy that plays Quake all day, like on his computer,
right?
In the evening.
Is that a thing anymore?
Yeah. I'm sure it's a lot different.
Right,
man. Yeah, there was a lot of shenanigans going on in like the 2000s and with administrators, and before they had all the software that we have now that locks everything down and
monitors
you. I mean, I've heard quite a stories of people like sysadmins just messing around all day. But
what do they do? Nobody knows.
But isn't that the sign of a good sysadmin, is that they have so many systems in place and that their users are taken care of, that, you know, they don't have to be out there doing anything.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. So I know, do you remember, if we take you back that far, did you think at the time that you needed to get like certificates? Cause I know that a lot of people who came up that way, especially in the networking world, there was like Cisco CCNAs and then there was A+ certifications, which is kind of very foreign to people that are now in the web development world where, you know, there's no real certification that anybody takes in mind.
Yeah. So when I was doing all the network stuff, I had all of the alphabet behind my name. So I have A+, N+, CCNA, all of the Microsoft stuff, MCP and MCNA and all of that stuff. And of course, that has long since expired because I haven't been in that world for over 10 years. But yeah, I had all of those certifications. And then going into transitioning over into the development side of things, it was more along the lines of, well, let me actually tell you the story. So I was on this networking team, and there was this very manual process that where we were copying and pasting things from one system to another system, and it was just crazy. And so I wrote this little Python script that just did everything automatically, and it saved everyone like 2 hours a day. And you know, my boss was ecstatic, and it worked great. And so he's like, well, let me introduce you to this development team and let's go from there. And so that's all it was. It was me kind of being mentored by this development team and, along the way, learning things along the way. And I never really thought about any kind of certifications because they never asked it of me. Right. So as long as I was able to complete this work, they were fine.
Oh, nice. So That's your first foray into programming, is just making these little scripts when you were working as a networking guy?
So again, on the side, like, of course, as a teenager and then growing up, I've always been like writing, doing things on the side. Like, right. I wrote my first website when I was maybe 14 or 15, and just playing around, but nothing professionally until about 12 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. So let's keep going. Let me recap. You were always interested in technology. You've written websites when you were a kid, kind of doing that on the side, kind of work a few odd jobs. You go into IT, get all your certifications, which I'm guessing was a pretty long process of going to a lot of proctored tests everywhere and spending a few hundred dollars every few weeks, I'm guessing.
Yeah, every month or so. Yeah, there was always something, and then you had to update, and then you had to renew and all that sort of stuff. So yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And then after you kind of got the bug and you moved into front end development. So how was that transition to, let's say, your first front end development job? Like, how were you feeling? Were you feeling overwhelmed, or did you think, hey, I got this? Was you said you're kind of doing this on the side? Uh-huh. Any problems? How'd that go?
The main thing is just learning the way things are done, like the proper way to do something, because, you have an idea of how to do something, but what is the company's way of doing it, right? And so just learning the routine, learning, because I didn't know Git at the time. So learning, version control, those basic things. But once got all that down, like I already knew all of the front end stuff just from doing stuff on the side. So HTML, CSS, all this JavaScript. Just learning the process, that was the main hurdle.
Yeah. And I think we'll get to your YouTube channel in a little bit. It's probably part of the reason that you have a YouTube channel, is to help people where you were probably when you were in your first job. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned this a few times, having like side jobs or side stuff. Can mm-hmm. you like, I mean, is that like more like, a side job, side hustle, where you were learning, and also maybe taking on like freelancing clients? Or was that more you just taking some time on the nights and weekends to learn?
Yeah, it was more of just a tinkering around kind of thing. I toyed with the idea of freelancing, but then I just always thought, well, I'm not good enough. Like there's no way I could ever do this. I thought it was fun. So it was more of a hobby. And so I would just build these little things. I would mess around with Flash, and that was so fun to just make these little animations. But it never became a thing because I didn't have the confidence. I didn't think that I could actually do that.
Why don't you think you had enough confidence at the time?
I think it was more of a, I didn't go to school for this. Nobody's going to trust me because, I'm like self-taught. And this was back in the late 90s, right? So this is, internet is still very new. I'm kind of a kid still, nobody's going to trust me. It was just all of those sort of things going through my mind. And so that's when I just decided, I'm going to go with this networking thing because this is a real thing and I can get certifications for it and I can prove that I know what I'm doing there.
Yeah. So it kind of reminds me of a little bit of, would you say you had this, I think this term's overused, but imposter mm-hmm. syndrome a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Because again, I knew what I was doing. Looking back, I knew what I was doing and I could have made it a thing, but just didn't have the confidence, to go for it.
So how long did it take, like after your first real web dev job, to to the point where you felt really confident and felt like you could pretty much take on anything?
So I was tasked with a lot of different projects to basically manage pretty quickly. Because I had already, you know, like I said, tinkered around with all of these things. So there was a lot that they didn't have to teach me. And so I was able to very, very quickly, start managing projects. And, it was not very long until I became a full stack developer, and I was just managing the entire projects from beginning to end.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I think like everybody's time frame when they start mm-hmm. going to web development to the time they, you know, they consider themselves a senior or full stack developer, it just depends on each person.
Yeah.
Like, you know, my co-host Dylan, he's been, you know, his career has taken off in just a few years. He went from pretty much a really junior dev, completely self-taught, to, you know, landing senior level positions. And also, I think mm-hmm. it's funny, in our industry, everybody has a different idea what a senior is.
Yeah.
And some companies really value years of experience, and then some companies, it's, you know, nothing to do with that. It's just what you mm-hmm. can prove during your interview, that which will mm-hmm. determine your spot. Or sometimes some companies, if you've been there for a while, you just automatically become a senior.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever felt like that treadmill of trying to get the next title or status in your early career, or maybe up to now?
Not really. It just, like I said, just has progressed naturally to me. You know, it was never like a struggle to get to that next spot. It was basically just do your job and be good at it. Do the best that you can, and it just kind of naturally progressed.
Yeah, for sure. So how did you go from, you know, from a junior dev to a senior dev to starting a YouTube channel? And was it a conscious decision to start YouTube? Were you trying to do some personal branding, or did you kind of fall into it? Were you trying to make some extra money or on the side or anything like that?
Yeah, people start YouTube channels for many, many reasons. And mine is very different, I think. So I have a couple of teenagers, and we're just, you know, talking about them doing something with their time other than, you know, watching Netflix all day and you know, whatnot, talking with their friends and all that. And so I wanted to give them like something to do, and like come up with some sort of a business that they could start. And they came up with the idea of starting YouTube channels. My son wanted to start a YouTube channel for gaming related, and my daughter was like beauty related or whatever. And it didn't go anywhere. You know, they didn't do anything with it. So, not surprisingly. And so then I decided, without telling anybody, that I was going to start a YouTube channel. And just basically to prove a point, like anything is possible if you put your mind to it, right? And I didn't really expect it to do anything. So I put up a couple of videos and they got views. And so I decided, let me just stay consistent with this. And I did like one video every week, and it just continued to grow and grow and grow. And eventually, I would say after about 3 to 4 weeks, maybe about a month, it had grown to almost like 400 or 500 subscribers in a month. And so then I decided, okay, let me tell my wife about this and my kids, and like, this is possible. And I just kept going from there.
That's such a cool feeling. Like, because what happens a lot of the times is you put something out there and you're like, it's crickets, and you don't hear anything.
Mm-hmm, right.
And then, but to see like growth and momentum and seeing people to watch, that's like the coolest feeling. Oh my goodness. And yeah. And really, I mean, would you say like in the first 6 months, you were able to hit YouTube, for people's listening, have thresholds of when you can be a partner on YouTube, which means they can basically get paid every time like an ad plays and things like that. Yeah. So, I mean, you pretty much in like the first 6 months got monetized, hit the 1,000 subscriber, I think it's 1,000 subscribers, 400 watch hours, all that right away, right?
Yeah, 4,000 watch hours, yeah. I would say that was within 6-7 months, somewhere in that time frame, yeah, pretty quickly. And again, this is a side thing. Like, I still have a full-time job, and I'm just putting in some time in the evenings and weekends to create the videos. And yeah, it came out of nowhere. Like if you would ask me 2 years ago, or tell me 2 years ago that this is what I'd be doing. I'd be on podcasts and making videos and all this other, like I would say, no, you're lying. That's there's no way, because I'm not really that kind of person. Like I'm not a very extrovert kind of person generally. So it has actually taken a lot of effort on my part to change and to become, you know, to get comfortable hearing your voice for one, you know, being in front of the camera, that sort of stuff. Like it's taken me time to get used to that.
Yeah, it's definitely a different feeling. So you never had created a blog or
no.
Did any sort of personal branding stuff before the YouTube channel?
Nothing at all. Like wow. A year and a half ago is when I started writing blogs, making videos, all of that stuff. And again, it's just out of my normal. It's just not me. But after doing it, I figured out like I really like this. I enjoy it. I like teaching people. I like creating content that's helpful. And like I said, a lot of people have different reasons for creating YouTube channels or whatever, whether it's, you know, to make money or whatever. For me, it was just to try to help people, and it's just kind of worked out.
Yeah, that's so cool. So would you say this is a good, would you recommend this to other developers to start YouTube channels?
I would actually, because whether now having the right mindset going into it is important, but just creating content, whether even if it's not a YouTube channel, if it's just a blog article, whatever it is, creating some sort of content is definitely a great idea. I mean, it'll expand your network for one, but it also teaches you, you know, because to create this content, you have to do extra research. You have to really understand a subject to create that content. So it's going to improve you, and it's going to also help others. So it's a win-win.
Yeah, that's sure. That's, you know, that's hard to say. That's good to say is what I'm mm-hmm. trying to say, mm-hmm. but what about, and we had a conversation, so those who don't know, we do have some communities of YouTube developers that we have, and Jesse helps pretty much moderate it all. You help set the rules and keep everybody straight and help disputes out on it. And so we had a conversation the other day about Twitter, and I kind of want to ask your opinion on this, and we'll get back to your story in a moment, but mm-hmm. you know, Twitter is pretty much been like the biggest tech hub. I feel like if you're a programmer or a developer, or even an engineer, there is such a there's a whole lot of developers on Twitter, and it's kind of the zeitgeist of our industry a little bit. I mean, mm-hmm. that's where things are happening. That's mm-hmm. where a lot of information comes out on. And so if you're like a developer that wants to kind of get, you know, start teaching people and you know, build your personal brand, do you think going with Twitter might be a better option than YouTube right away? Or do you think that YouTube's fine? Or what do you think?
I think that Twitter is definitely a place to grow a brand. It's definitely a place to grow your network. There's a lot of stuff going on Twitter. So it's definitely, it has its place. I think every platform kind of has its place. There's a lot of platforms that have their place. So LinkedIn is also a great one. As well to build brand and build a network. And then YouTube, I think would be, in my opinion, YouTube would be a bigger platform to actually build your brand. But Twitter will get you out there and network more, right? So I think everything has its place. Yeah, for sure.
So do you feel like it's kind of scary though, like if I could just see I could just imagine a listener listening in right now and be like, now you're telling me, you know, mm-hmm. If I want to start building personal brand, I have to create a Twitter account and a YouTube account and then learn how to do videos and learn how to talk to a camera and be okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it, you know, we're not Instagram yeah. models.
right.
Although, you know, we all don't look like Web Dev Simplified and
right. Yeah, I'm starting to lose my hair for sure.
You tease him about his hair. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you think that's like a part of like your strategy and what platform you use if you kind of want to get yourself out there?
Yeah, no, like I said, you could create a blog, you know, start writing blogs on Medium or Dev2 or something like that. just getting some sort of content out there, and then as well, like a Twitter account, and have that as a way. Now, Twitter is not all about promotion, though. Like, if you get on Twitter and you just throw out links to your stuff and that's all you do, you're not going to go anywhere. Like, Twitter is more of a community. It's more of a conversation, like an ongoing conversation, a never-ending conversation. That's kind of how I view it. And so interacting with that community is different than just creating content.
Yeah, I guess it definitely has more of a community feel to it.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Because when I first started my Twitter account, that's all I did, was I just posted links to my new videos, and that didn't get me anywhere. But once I started interacting and having, you know, joining in on these conversations, that's when I started growing on Twitter.
Yeah, I've been definitely learning. Like, I've been on Twitter forever, but I've only taken it seriously in the last maybe year or two, and it's helped me grow. I mean, I don't have a huge Twitter presence, but like watching your account, watching people like you and Danny Thompson and a couple of the other guys, just really kind of opened my eyes. West Boss is really good about how you just kind of deliver little snippets and values. And it's almost like a YouTube channel. You just got to get a lot of value and start joining in the conversations before you can keep growing it.
For sure. I think it's very open source. That's a good term. And so letting people see where you're at in whatever process, just kind of sharing little tidbits here and there, like, hey, I'm working on this new course, here's a little portion of it, just to keep them connected with you, right?
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about you on your journey. You're working full time now doing YouTube. You decide to create your first product. How did that come up? Why did you decide to do that? What was the thought, and how's it going?
Yeah. So that was kind of the goal, is to create, not originally. Originally, the goal was just to prove a point to my kids. But then it became, let's create this content and let's help people. And then I start really digging into the community and seeing what others are doing, right? And seeing where this could lead to. Like, I originally didn't view this as a business. And then after several months, it turned into a business. And so then my next thought was, okay, how do I continue growing this business? What is the next step? And it seemed like the logical next step was to create a product. And so then, yeah, that's where that came from. And so far, it's doing pretty well. And I'm working on my second product. And I plan on continuing to release courses. My goal was 3 courses a year. I might strap that or cut that down to 2 courses a year, maybe, because time is the only issue.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, when these things start, our goals definitely, like, the goalpost changes. Like, maybe at the beginning was just to prove a point to your kids, and then it was like, oh, maybe I can help a lot of people, and then maybe your goal is, well, maybe I can help a lot of people, but also help some people that may want to pay for my things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it's like, well, maybe I can make a mini business out of this. So is your goals, right? So what is your goal for a YouTube channel now?
Just to continue to be consistent. That's always been the goal, even from the beginning. Let me just stay consistent at this and see where it goes. And so that's kind of still the goal, because it's going to continue to be a side gig for a while. And so being consistent, continuing to post content that is helpful, and then continuing to grow the business as much as I can in my free time.
Yeah, that's always the hardest part. I've been asked that a lot too. It's like, well, why don't you just become a full-time YouTuber?
Yeah.
And yeah, if I was like 20 years old and had no responsibilities and lived in some dinky apartment, that would be fine. Cause then I can make, I could stretch a few $1,000s or whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, I think you might be able to relate. You know, we both have kids. Mm-hmm. Families, and you know, things are a lot more harder to do.
Yeah, for sure. And I view all of the content that I create, all of this business and everything, it's all, like you said, a personal brand. It's a branding thing, growing my network. All of these things are good, but yeah, it doesn't pay the bills at this point. if at any point in time it starts to pay the bills, then maybe I'll think about that, but who knows how long that might take.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, it takes, you have to get millions of views a month you have to have a pretty good income coming in from either like a product that just mm-hmm. is selling like gangbusters every month, mm-hmm. or you're mm-hmm. doing constant launches of new products to even think about going full time on YouTube. You know, you do see a lot. There's, you know, hundreds of, I don't know, hundreds, but tens of thousands of creators on YouTube that are doing it full time, but mm-hmm. they are the vast, vast minority of people of doing it, because, you know, YouTube doesn't pay a ton of money. A lot of times what me and CodeStacker does, you know, we could have gone jobs at McDonald's or $15 an hour at Fry's or something, right. and probably made more money for all the hours we put in. I think at eventually at some point you get to the point where that, I like this term called flywheel, where you've mm-hmm. put enough effort in the past where the effort you put in now is worth more, that mm-hmm. now you don't have to put in as many hours, but it's still not, you know, enough to support a family of four in middle income America, I guess.
Right. Yeah, no, I definitely view it as almost like an investment, because you're creating these videos and it's costing me more to create these videos at this point in time. But they accrue over time, right? And so they still are getting views. And so then after I have, you know, 500 videos on my YouTube channel, maybe then I'll start making enough to do that full time. But yeah, that wasn't the goal. The goal, I mean, again, like I said, what is your reasoning for creating a YouTube channel? If it's to make money, then you might want to rethink that. If it's to help people, if it's because you enjoy it, then that's a good start right there.
Yeah. And there's always going to be like outliers. There's always going to be people sure. that come out of nowhere that now are getting like 500,000 views. You're like, you could say like they're killing it and they're probably going to quit their jobs, and every video they mm-hmm. put out, they're getting 40,000 views or something crazy like that. But those are vast, you know, vastly, you know, very rare, I think.
Yes, for sure.
But that's cool. I like the idea. Like, you're investing in yourself. This is kind of, it has somewhat of a compounding effect as long as you're consistent. I think, you know, you put enough time in, enough, and literally years for most people, like this mm-hmm. is going to really help you out in the long term.
Yeah.
So let me shift gears here, and I want to ask you a few more questions and then we'll wrap it up. But since you have worked in IT, you've worked as a front end full stack developer, you've been creating videos for a couple of years, I thought you would be great to ask some of these like advice questions that I've been asked before. So, well, first let me ask, who watches your videos? Who do you think your like typical viewer is?
I would say mostly are beginners, people thinking about starting to learn web development, or people who are maybe intermediate and want to learn, you know, the more advanced intermediate topics. Yeah.
So I think this question will work well. So right now, I've been looking on some forums and some other places, and the thing I keep seeing over and over again is and partly because of, unfortunately, the pandemic, it feels like, and you correct me if I'm wrong, it feels like things are getting a little saturated in our field, especially for new developers. And so it's becoming really difficult for them to get their first jobs, maybe more harder than it's ever been before. Like, at least when I'll speak for myself, but like in the mid 2000s, I feel like it was still, most companies were looking for CS degrees. Most companies were looking for people with experience, or maybe if you came from IT or QA or somewhere, like there was some kind of credentials. And then mm-hmm. in sometime in the early 2010s, like, and maybe it began in maybe 2008, 2009, there was this mantra of everybody needs to code. Everybody should learn how to code. And the industry has been like doubling every 5 years. There's an influx mm-hmm. of new developers coming in, many of whom either don't have computer science degrees or have other degrees, or they're bootcamp grads. But it's mm-hmm. becoming more and more difficult for developers to stand out. Now with the pandemic, there was a bunch of layoffs last year, and now we're slowly, the economy slowly coming back, and mm-hmm. employers are starting to hire more. But how do you, what kind of advice would you give to some of the people like your viewers who watch your channel to stand out, to try to get that first job, to get into the industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think that with everything going remote, yeah, obviously it has been a lot easier for them to hire. Before you'd have to be able to relocate. Now you can work across on the other side of the world for anybody, you know, anywhere. I think that is true. But there are also so many startups. There are so many new things coming out. There are so many new jobs, I think, that it's going to be fine. But my advice would be just to, get good at something. There's a lot of people that they want to learn HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and then they learn just the very basics of those. Then they jump into React. I would say get good at something. Don't jump all over the place learning Python and JavaScript and Go and just learn something. Get good at it and you'll do fine.
So like specialize in one area?
Yes. Even if that's a specialized, even if it's just front end and you're specialized in CSS, like there's a job for that.
I did a little bit of that when I was going through and I was doing back-end development. I wanted to specialize. I wanted to go to the front-end development, knowing that it's a pretty competitive industry. I really focused on Ember.js at the beginning and then Vue.js. And I think that's helped me out a lot. So I like that advice.
Yeah.
You mentioned really quickly at the beginning about how we're now in this weird world where everybody's remote. Like a bunch of tech companies started doing full-time remote sometime in March of 2020. Now a few of them are coming back. A lot of the big tech companies aren't coming back until June or July. Do you think that helps new developers or hurts new developers? Because one thing I've always heard is that as a new developer, you really want to be in an in-person team somewhere because then you can just turn around and ask the person next to you for help. And then I've noticed, at least before the pandemic, that most companies wouldn't hire remote developers unless they were senior status or mid to senior status, because you just can't, it's really hard for the junior devs to get onboarded and up and running without being in person. Do you think that's still the case? Do you think that's changed or?
I don't know. I don't know if it's going to go back to the way it was. I think that it may to a certain extent, but I think that companies have been forced to find out how it can work. Pair programming, there's all kinds of different ways to go about it. But I think it can work. So I think it's a double-edged sword. It can be good. It can be bad. Having everyone remote means there's more competition. But again, there's more jobs. There's two ways to look at it. I can see both sides.
Yeah, it's a complicated question. I don't think there's any right answer. I think maybe some companies right now have gotten so good at onboarding and they've been hiring junior devs. I know at Amazon, we've hired junior devs right out of college and they've been onboarded and, without being in person, that worked okay.
Yeah.
Which was something that didn't happen in the past, I'm sure.
Yeah. Again, in the past, I mean, and it's not even with dev, it's just with business in general. Businesses have figured out that we're able to do things remotely and it can even benefit the business financially to do that. So, yeah.
Yeah. And businesses love it because now they have this huge pool of people that that are applying from all over. Usually I haven't seen too much outside. Like usually you have to hire someone inside your same country. So I haven't seen too many companies opening it up to worldwide, but at least same people in the same country can do it and start applying. So that's really cool. And maybe that will help. Maybe we will see like a onboarding junior devs, like maybe some guy that, did free code camp for 8 months, took your advice, specialized in Python, and then they're able to get hired on to a place in California remotely. Mm-hmm. And then that may become the new norm. That'd be really cool. And I bet a lot of people would like that.
Yeah.
What was that?
It could be a thing. Yep.
Yeah. Let me ask just a couple more questions. We talked throughout your journey, you talked a little bit about side hustling. So do you think, there's a couple of different side hustles. We talked about yours where you were just kind of tinkering around, learning on the side while you're doing your IT. And then there's the side hustle, like creating a YouTube channel, creating products, writing blogs, and usually has some sort of pay requirement on it. Do you think that every developer should create a blog, that everyone should have some sort of side hustle while they're working. And to play devil's advocate for a moment, I mean, you could argue that if you are a mid-level or even senior dev out there, you're probably getting paid a good amount in this industry. So why bother like putting the side hustles and things in place and then, you know, having to be away from family and things like that?
Yeah, I think there are, it just depends on the person, because there are people that are just fine with being the dev and then having their free time, which is great. I have just always had something, I view it as a hobby. So this is something that I actually enjoy doing. And so if you would have to push yourself to do it, I don't know if it would be fun. Like, I don't know if I would recommend it. But if it's something that you enjoy, then yeah, I would definitely not recommend working 40 hours a day and then working 40 hours again on the side hustle, and you're just going to burn yourself out. Right. So if you do undertake a side gig, it needs to be something that you enjoy doing, that you're going to enjoy your time. Right. If you don't, then you're just going to be miserable.
Yeah, I like that advice. You got to think of your mental health, where you're at, kind of the cost benefits of each. I think that's probably a good idea. I don't think we've gotten in this. I remember a couple of tweets. I don't remember who they were, that like going against the crazy hustle culture that we see nowadays, where everybody's working 80 hours a week and working on their side projects for 30 hours. And sometimes it's okay. Just go to do your 9-to-5, come home, be with your family, enjoy your hobbies and Netflix and all that. Yes. I think that's okay too. Me, I kind of lean towards more of like, well, you should set yourself up just in case. Like, just in case you know, something happens with their job or something happens here, now you can have something to fall back on. So I think example of that was like Chris Sean. He's another YouTuber. He has a YouTube channel. It's kind of more of like a day in the life of, like, he has these vlog style videos and he does a lot of advice. But he was talking about, he had worked at Entrepreneur Magazine for several years. And he's also one of these guys that was self-taught, taught himself to code in like a few months, got a big break, got a job. He transferred a couple jobs and got this Entrepreneur Magazine. And he thought this was going to be his like lifelong dream of working at this job. And then middle of the pandemic last year, they laid him off. And then he was like, oh crap, what do I do? So he like, it just put a fire underneath him to... He like created his own clothing line and he created his own podcast and he started doing YouTube videos again. He actually had a YouTube channel that he kind of let go for a while, and he started doing more YouTube and he created these side businesses, and he's like, I can't ever be in this position again. And so now he's a developer advocate. So now he is able to like sort of do a couple of things at once, doing the dev advocate job during the day. And I think some sites hustle stuff during the night and he loves it. And he thinks that if he ever loses his job again, he won't be in that position that he felt when he left Entrepreneur Magazine. But that's not for everybody.
You're right. It's not. I think it is definitely a good idea to think about the what ifs, but also not to worry about them so much. Like, stuff happens, right? Sometimes. It's definitely a good idea to, if it's within your ability, to have something to fall back on, but not always necessary.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for being here. How can people reach you at? Where should people hit you up? And we'll put these in the show notes too.
Yeah. Code Stacker everywhere. Code Stacker. It's on Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, website, all of that.
That's very cool. All right. Thanks, Jesse.
All right. Thank you.
Hey guys, thanks for watching. If you want to find more about what I'm up to, go to dylanisrael.com.
And if you want to know what I'm up to, you can check out my website at eric.video. If you haven't already, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps us out. And if you do, you might even be featured on our next episode. Don't forget to check out the website at selftaughtornot.com. From there, you can sign up for a mailing list where we give away free courses and a bunch of cool stuff. And we'll also let you know when the next episode comes out. And finally, if you didn't know, we have a Facebook group. It's called Code, Tech, and Caffeine. We have over 10,000 members, and you can find the link at selftaughtornot.com. So come join us. We have tons of developers willing to help you guys, mentor you guys. Check it out. Just make sure you go to selftaughtornot.com and check out the Code Tech and Caffeine link. Thanks and take care.